You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Have you thought about serving as a chaplain? Pastors, have you given consideration serving as a chaplain in the ministry to the armed forces? We're going to chat about that today. What does it look like to serve as a chaplain in ministry to the armed forces? Two chaplains joining us today to share their story. Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, Chaplain Curtis Biltman, his U.S. Air Force chaplain serving at Dyess Air Force Base in Abilene, Texas. Chaplain Biltman, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also joining us today, Chaplain David Edwards, U.S. Air Force chaplain serving at Patrick Space Force Base in Brevard County, Florida. Chaplain Edwards, welcome.
Awesome. Thank you. Glad to be here.
We are excited to share your stories today. And I also have to say, I should point out that this is a first for us. I don't think we've talked with anyone serving in a Space Force base before.
No.
So this is kind of fun to have a first for us.
I get that a lot.
We have talked with astronauts before.
That's true. Well,
cool. But yeah. I don't think we've had anyone serving in a Space Force base before. So that's pretty exciting. So let's start with you, Chaplain Biltman. How do you get to make the love of Christ known in your vocation as a chaplain every day serving as a U.S. Air Force chaplain?
Well, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. When I first joined the Chaplain Corps in the Air Force, their motto, their mission is caring for airmen and guardians and their families more than anyone thinks possible. And I remember when I first went active duty, one of the very first counseling sessions that I had with somebody, sat down with them. They weren't a Christian, but as we went on, you know, and sharing long gospel with them and, you know, asked for permission to share that gospel with them. And they said, yeah, I'd like to hear that. And by the end of our time meeting together, his comment at the end of that was, wow, you helped me more than I thought possible, which I'm like, that's awesome. But that was just kind of a cool thing. And, you know, as a chaplain, you get to do that on a regular basis where you get to help people, sharing long gospel with them. It's a very, very ripe mission field. And there's, you know, kind of a mix of people that are in that mission field. It's a lot of young people, but one of the things that the Chaplain Corps has is, and it's by federal law, is 100% confidentiality. And so we guarantee that anything they share with us isn't going anywhere else. And so that draws a lot of people in to see a chaplain, even if they're not religious. And even though about a little over 2/3 claim to be Christian, a lot of those airmen and guardians are separated from their church homes. I don't think, you know, we always do a good job of keeping in touch with people that go into the military, and they're moving around and they're having trouble getting connected with the church. And so they kind of get isolated from that, but it's an opportunity to connect with them, or even non-Christians that come and want to talk to a chaplain because they're facing some challenges. And a lot of times what they need to hear is the gospel of Christ. And so we just have the great opportunity to do that. It's a little bit different than, you know, like when I was in the parish, because, you know, you get to be there for a lot of things in the parish. But one of the things that I noticed is that people didn't always come to me with their sins. Like they came to me to talk about, you know, their, you know, when they're facing grief or, you know, different challenges of the world. But when it came to kind of their own personal struggles, a lot of times I would hear about it after the fact. And that it's very different in the military, because there isn't that stigma. They're not there to try to maintain some sort of image with their chaplain. And because of that confidentiality, they just pour out their deepest, darkest struggles. And it's just a privilege to be able to address that with the gospel of Christ.
Chaplain Edwards, what about you? How do you get to make the love of Christ known in your vocation?
Yeah, a lot of it would be similar to what Chaplain Biltman was saying. And it's exciting to hear other chaplains share their experiences. As I was listening, one of the key things that came to my mind is introducing people to forgiveness. You won't have to go very far to find someone that might be familiar with the word, but unfamiliar with the concept. And as chaplains, as Lutheran chaplains, we have a very strong understanding of forgiveness, and being able to bring that into somebody's life who is feeling the weight of guilt and shame and not quite knowing what to do with it has been pretty exciting for a lot of people, especially when they learn about what this forgiveness is for the first time. Not just forgiveness like, oh, hey, don't worry about it, be better next time, but you are free from from this weight of guilt and sin. And oftentimes we take some time to build the whole framework to actually contextualize the sin. So sharing the love of Christ, helping them see what sin is. Again, people will experience the consequences of it, but not really know how to articulate that, or not know how to describe it. So being able to deliver this awesome gift of forgiveness when they're dealing with the brokenness of sin is pretty sweet. And then when I get to preach, But not every chaplain is a preaching chaplain. We have different kind of roles in the base and mission. So when I get to preach, it's fun because I can just go give overt proclamation. And I was in the parish for a few years. And one of the challenges that I think comes up in parish preaching is there's always a little bit of anxiety, like, ooh, I don't want to say the wrong thing and upset the wrong people. And that's going to throw off the whole, you know, the whole ecosystem of the congregation, whatever. In the chaplain corps, at least for me, there's a little bit more freedom because my job and what I do is continues regardless of what people do in the pews or don't do, what they like or don't like. We just come in there and preach every day. We work and do ministry and engagement throughout the base. So chapel preaching for a chaplain is very freeing. I just tell them the truth as clearly as possible, and Lord willing, it sinks in and does something good for them.
You mentioned there's different kinds of chaplains. So I'm curious what a day looks like for both of you. Chaplain Edwards, let's start with you. What does a day look like? For you serving in a Space Force base?
Yeah, well, first we put on our helmets, we fly up and talk with the aliens, and then, no, that's not true. I don't know anything about aliens. but it's a typical normal day. Like I'll get up and I go work out in the morning and then go to my office and do kind of some prayer devotion time, check emails. And if I'm doing things right, according to my plan, I do most of my administrative work in the morning. This is emailing, communicating about events, doing computer-based training, coordinating with leadership, all the other moving pieces that come with activities. And then in the afternoon, if I'm sticking with my schedule, I'll go out and do unit engagement. After lunch, I don't skip lunch. After lunch, I'll go out and do unit engagement. And this is, again, one of the really cool parts of being a chaplain is that we're with a civilian pastor, we're more limited in how often we get to interact with our people. As a chaplain, we can just show up at their workplace, and the vast majority of the time, they're happy to see you there. And they will invite you in and they'll tell you about what they do and what they're working on. And they develop some connections with you, some rapport. And then that's like the craziest thing is that that's our job. Just going out and talking to people, getting to know them, making connections so that we can support them in good times and in bad times. And if leadership sees us out there talking to them, they love it. And then somewhere in the middle, I'll have a meeting or two. And then right around 16:30 or 4:30, the official duty day is done. And unless something drags beyond that, I get to go home.
Hmm. Chaplain Biltman, what does a typical day look like for you maybe on Air Force Base in Texas? Or you were recently deployed too, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, on base, it sounds very similar to like what Chaplain Edwards described, although I would add that there is no normal day because every day always has unique things coming up, you know, counselings that come up or, you know, unexpected things that you're dealing with or just whatever. But yeah. And then downrange on deployment, you know, was kind of a different kind of routine. And of course, you know, back home, you're on call 24/7 downrange. That's even more so the case and you're much more accessible. And so, you know, you really just spend so much time, unit engagement, and just out there with the people building relationships. And that's, which is an awesome thing to be able to do so that when things are difficult, when they have challenges, you've built that trust there and they come to you and talk to you. So, but again, there was really no typical day downrange either. It was very, very much a mix of various things that were going on. So.
Tell us about the men and women that both of you get to serve. I know Chaplain Biltman, you just mentioned the challenges that they might face. So who are the men and women that you get to serve? What are their challenges and how are you able to make a difference in their lives, Chaplain Biltman?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a very diverse group. Although, I mean, a commonality is that there's a lot of young people in the military, you know, a lot of people in their early 20s. And so it's a neat opportunity to minister to that age group, but there's a lot of diversity, a lot of different backgrounds that people are coming from, a lot of different reasons that they join the military. And there's just a wide range of challenges that they're facing. I mean, if you look at, I mean, my personal experience as well as the statistics on like counseling, I mean, it's everything from workplace issues to grief to moral injury. But by far, the number one thing that they're dealing with is relationship issues. And so that's one of the biggest areas that we get to address. And not only on the counseling side of, hey, they're facing some challenges, how do we help them? But also on the front end to what we try to offer various retreats, marriage retreats and things like that, that can proactively help equip the airmen, the guardians, the military members and their families with the tools they need to deal with some of those relationship things. So.
Yeah. And maybe to build on that, the fact that a lot of them are young people, which I sort of forget sometimes. I kind of think everyone around me is the same age. But then I talk to these, I don't know why, but like, you know, then you talk to these kids, like, well, how old are you? Well, 18, 98. Holy smokes. So they go straight from high school to boot camp to living on a base where they're expected to be a responsible adult, managing sometimes hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars of equipment and supplies, and they get everyone looking at them. One of the unique stressors of the military is that every year, every single person gets some kind of annual review. And then in addition to that, both perceived and in reality, people are often being just observed or scrutinized. And so there's an added pressure of needing to perform, which sometimes keeps people from wanting to talk when things suck or not knowing what to say because they're like, well, I don't want anyone to get the impression that I can't do my job. So as Chaplain Beltman said, that it's a wonderful opportunity for them to come to a place where no one gets to hear what they say. And no one can tell them you can't go to the chaplain. So that's one, just the stress of figuring out life and then the scrutiny. But the other thing that I've noticed come up a lot is things often related to anxiety, which is unsurprising given the increased tendency of that sort of thing in the world around us. And then seeing that much more so in the military. If people are downrange, I have not been deployed yet. You can imagine the stress of things at home that you can't do anything to help increases. If you have people on base and there's family troubles going on with extended family or relatives, again, that's a stressor. Or sometimes it's a small base. There can be all sorts of relationship drama and you're all in the same area. That can be a stressor and anxiety inducer, range of stuff. But unique to the military, I think, is a lot of young people and a lot of extra scrutiny and instability. That's the other thing, that people can move in a matter of days. You can get told, hey, you're going to go across the world for 6 months. You have 72 hours to get ready. Good luck. You know, and this is crazy. I had people that they had a deployment turned on and they were planning, preparing, and then it was turned off. They're like, oh, okay, I guess we transition back. And then it was turned on again. And then, so they're having to shift back and forth and you have to sell cars, cancel leases, restart. There's a lot of the instability can be a big, big stress for the military members.
Absolutely.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that. Like canceling leases and starting leases, that alone.
Right. Sounds...
Anxiety.
Yes.
Right now.
I know. Very difficult. The challenges that our servicemen and women face each day and having chaplains there to serve them. So very important. We're going to learn more about that in just a moment as we continue our conversation on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Only 750 of over 7,000 languages spoken in the world have the full Bible. Lutheran Bible Translators wants to help close the gap in this generation. We can do this with your help. Connect your congregation to the global church by hosting a Bible Translation Sunday, an advocacy event that raises awareness about Bible translation. Lutheran Bible Translators provides ready-to-use service elements, a sermon outline, and more, all designed to fit your church's schedule. Join the movement of Lutheran churches committed to bringing God's word to every language. Visit lbt.org/bts to learn more and sign up for a Bible Translation Sunday. That's lbt.org/bts.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we're talking with U.S. Air Force chaplains, Chaplain Curtis Biltman and Chaplain David Edwards, about the life of serving as a chaplain in Ministry of the Armed Forces in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, serving our armed forces, particularly with Air Force chaplains. What does it look like on Air Force bases and Space Force bases? What does that look like? Now, I believe it might have been Chaplain Edwards, you mentioned moral injury being one of the challenges. Is that right? You mentioned that earlier as one of the things, the challenges that servicemen and women face.
Chaplain Biltman said it, so I'll let him talk about it, but it's definitely something we all face.
Yeah. Chaplain Biltman, can you tell us more about what that means, what it means, and then how you care for those experiencing moral injury?
Sure. Yeah. Moral injury, I mean, it's something that's been around since the fall, but has been articulated, you know, as the term moral injury, probably more so in the last 20 years or so. But even Martin Luther addresses that in one of his letters, where he talks about a soldier who is struggling with serving as a soldier. And the title of that essay is that soldiers too can be saved. And what moral injury is when there are moral dilemmas that somebody's facing. And sometimes it's it can be something that somebody in a leadership position is sort of forcing, or it could be where somebody witnesses something where there's a moral concern, or it could be that they actually carry something out and in retrospect realize, hey, they broke their own morality, or they broke God's morality in those things. And it tends to be focused more in the military and in situations like that, some other areas like police officers and whatnot, because there are situations that often come up that sort of present that moral dilemma, you know, where it could be in a war situation where, you know, a child comes out with an explosive device and somebody's faced with the decision of, okay, do I allow that to take place? And they're in a situation where maybe they have to act on that in a way that later presents, you know, just some deep moral conflict. And that it's really when there's a dissonance between the way somebody believes the world should be and the way it is. And so it can be a very deep, challenging thing for somebody. And so the way you deal with that ultimately is through the cross. And, you know, it's the idea of understanding that we live in a sinful world. And, you know, that's, you know, the source of that dissonance is that sin, and understanding what God did to deal with that and ultimately to offer forgiveness. You know, sometimes it's a matter of recognizing that, you know, forgiving ourselves, but also recognizing Christ's forgiveness. Just to give you an example, it was early on when I first joined, our daughter and son had both been serving in the Air Force, and our son in his first 3 years went on 5 deployments. And, he had just gotten back from one of those deployments, and we went out to New Jersey. He was stationed at McGuire at the time, and we went to go visit him, and he and I were sitting on his front porch, and we were smoking a cigar and just chatting and just having a good time and laughing and whatever. And then he got really serious, and he said, "Dad, I know that all I do is refuel planes," and he's what they call a boom operator. And so he would do the in-flight refueling. And he said, "I know all I do is refuel planes, but I know where they're going. I know what I'm equipping them to do. I see them come back without their missiles, without their bombs." And he was struggling with that idea of, you know, they would do more. And that was the first time that I really kind of saw firsthand, oh, this is moral injury. Because I had heard the term recently before that, didn't quite understand it. But I'm like, he's dealing with a moral dilemma. He's doing his job, he's carrying out his vocation, but he's struggling with the moral implications. And it was a very simplified view of, you know, thou shalt not kill. And so part of, you know, helping him, you know, work through that was, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, Luther's writings on that. Part of that is reframing and helping somebody see how that, you know, how what they are doing fits into things. And so, you know, killing is wrong, but there's also the government's given the authority to carry out punishment, to carry out war. And so helping him see how, you know, he's carrying out his vocation in an honorable way. And that's a good thing. And that's a God-pleasing thing to carry out your vocation when it's an honorable vocation. And it's actually fulfilling God's will. And it's, you know, it's a tough thing, you know, dealing with war, and it prevents a lot of challenges. What's a just war? And it's the kind of thing, you know, that, you know, a surgeon maybe has to face if somebody has a part of their body that's infected and is not, you know, it maybe they have to amputate something in order to save the rest of the body. And that's kind of, you know, what war is like at times. And so it's helping people sort through those moral dilemmas that are inherent in that sort of environment.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds from both of you, it sounds like serving as a chaplain is very fulfilling, also very challenging, a very unique space to be serving and to be sharing the love of Christ. Why did both of you choose this vocation as chaplains? I'm very curious of your stories, Chaplain Edwards.
Yeah, the way I usually describe it to people is that there are two things that I've kind of maintained an interest in since childhood, with pastoral ministry and the military. And then when I was in 8th grade, I went to this thing called the Ministerial Youth Retreat that my associate pastor at the time recommended me for. And there I first learned about military chaplaincy. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I want. It's the military and it's pastoral ministry. I'll just do that. And I pretty much from that time, I knew I was going to go into pastoral ministry and kind of kept thinking about chaplaincy. And then when I was in college, I looked into it a little bit more. And then when I got to the seminary, I looked at the chaplain candidate program and continued through the training process and went from there. But the pieces of chaplaincy that uniquely appealed to me were, one, it's, I mentioned a little bit earlier, that you have an opportunity to be more deeply involved in people's lives than you do as a civilian pastor. You you see the same people every day. You can go work out with them. You can run with them. You can do their job with them. You get more deeply engaged. There's another reason that was interested in chaplaincy, which was sort of kind of a matter of fact sort of thing. If you can, you should, was basically the advice I got from another LCMS chaplain. And because it's such a needed role and there's so few people that can do it, if you can, you should. And I thought, well, that makes enough sense. And then it's just an exciting combination of things of the military and the pastoral ministry. And the more that I'm involved in it, the more confident I feel in pursuing this role, because there is an incredible opportunity to bring the good news of Jesus and the whole framework for understanding reality and the story of everything to people that experience the consequences of a broken world, but don't have the language to articulate it or to make sense of it. And it is awesome to be able to walk through those things with people. So more or less, those are the reasons why I'm a chaplain.
Chaplain Biltman, tell us about your path to becoming a chaplain.
Sure. So I'm second generation Air Force, but in the wrong direction. As I mentioned before, yeah, two of our children, our oldest daughter and our youngest son, both enlisted in the Air Force. And I had no military background. And so when they both went active duty Air Force, they're like, Dad, you should join too. And I'm like, okay. No, but they were really my inspiration when they joined. And so I called up the toll-free number for the Air Force and, said, hey, I'm interested in becoming a chaplain. And so their first question to me over the phone was, well, so how old are you? And I was 44 at the time. Mm-hmm. There was this pause on the other end. Then they said, well, how much do you weigh? And at the time I weighed 280 pounds. And that was about the end of the conversation then. And so I thought, okay, well, I tried, and looked into it, but obviously that's not meant to be. And then a few weeks later, I was up in Fort Wayne for a PhD class, and I was walking through the commons area. And as I was walking through, this random person stopped me and said, hey, have you ever thought about being a military chaplain? And I said, well, this is literally what I said. I said, yes, I have, but I'm too old and I'm too fat. And he said, well, the Navy just raised their age. And he said, the weight thing, we got this tape measure thing, we can get you in. And I'm like, okay. So I had lunch with him. And he was a Navy recruiter for chaplains. And after praying on it for a week or so, I called him back and I said, but my passion to do this is because of my kids. And since they're both in the Air Force, I would only want to do this if it was in the Air Force. And so, thanks, but no thanks. And he said, oh, I understand. I get that. And then a few weeks later, I was at a conference out in Phoenix and was walking by the display areas. And this random person stopped me and said, hey, have you ever thought being a military chaplain? I thought, okay, this is getting weird. And I'm like, can you not see me? He says, I mean, I'm right here, And so I told him my story, and it happened to be, Steve and Craig were at the conference there. And so I told him my story. And of course, they're the ecclesiastical endorsers for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And so, and I told them about, kind of that path. They said, well, the military is looking for leaders. And if you quit the first time you're told no, they don't want you anyway. And they challenged me and said, hey, what I challenge you to do is to pursue it again. And this time, every time you're told no, ask them what the exception to policy is. And so I said, okay, I'll try that. And so I pursued it again. And the next thing I knew, I had a waiver for my age. I had a waiver for my knee reconstruction. And it came down to one factor, and that was my weight. And I thought, well, that's on me. And so over the next 14 months, I lost about 80 pounds and met the requirements for the Air Force to be a chaplain and met the Synod's requirements. And so that was kind of my path in. And I started out on the reserve because I thought, okay, I'll just do this on the side. And once I was the work as a reservist, I realized, hey, I love what I'm doing here. And I love this ministry. And, by the grace of God, he was, really impacting a lot of, people through that ministry. And I was like, I would really like to go active duty, but there's no way my wife would ever go for that. And so I just kind of put it out of my mind. I thought, okay, I'm not even going to consider that. And God had put that on my heart. And a few weeks later, my wife approached me and said, "Hey, have you ever thought about going active duty?" And I thought, "Okay, are you serious?" But she saw the joy that I had and how God was using me. And so she really wanted to support that. And so with her encouragement and her blessings, made that transition into active duty. And it's just been a joy to serve in this ministry. Just really loved it.
It's so nice that the Lord provided those subtle hints for you.
Yeah. Sledgehammer.
I have enjoyed our time with you today. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. Thank you for your service. And certainly thank you for being our guest today. Chaplain Curtis Biltman, U.S. Air Force Chaplain serving at Dyess Air Force Base in Abilene, Texas. Thank you so much, Chaplain Biltman.
You bet. Thank you. Appreciate your time.
And Chaplain David Edwards, U.S. Air Force Chaplain serving at Patrick Space Force Base in Brevard County, Florida. Thank you so much, Chaplain Edwards.
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you for the opportunity.
And joining us now is Chaplain Craig Mueller, Director of the LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Thanks for joining us, Chaplain.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
So we've been talking about chaplaincy, and can you describe for us the need for chaplains right now?
Yes, it's really short. Right now, all service branches, the Navy, Air Force, and the Army are just begging for qualified clergy to apply for chaplains. And so it's really critical for us as Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to bring good pastors into this fold because we have the goods. You know, we have the truth of God's word, and we can bring the sacraments to our Lutheran personnel, as well as missionaries to those who have never heard the gospel. So it's definitely a harvest that is plentiful and the workers are few.
Absolutely. Now, if men are interested, if they've been hearing these stories and are inspired to start the process for chaplaincy, what does that process look like of becoming an LCMS chaplain?
Sure. The number one process is just contact me at lcmschaps@lcms.org, and we can start the process. So the minimum for us as Missouri Synod chaplains is you have to have a Master of Divinity degree. So if you're a pastor listening already out in the parish, you've got the qualifications. So we'd love to talk to you. If you're into the pre-seminary program or at the seminary, contact us. They have programs called Chaplain Candidates, so we can get you involved early. So the big thing is that we require a Master of Divinity. That also is the Department of Defense regulation, and then also at least 2 years of parish experience, but you know, all that's negotiable depending on your age and your experience and so forth. And I think that's the other thing that our pastors need to know is it is a young person's game. So you have to be pretty much under the age of 45 to apply. Now, every service branch is different. They do give age waivers, especially for an experienced pastor. So I would say if you're interested at all, give us a call and we can answer that question for you.
Yes, there are waivers available for several things, as we've heard in our story today. Now, is there anything else about eligibility? Any other eligibility requirements? I know you've already listed a few, but is there anything else that anybody needs to know about eligibility?
Not really, because once you apply, then we'll go through the application process.
Sure.
So the Defense Department has their applications. So there are certain medical qualifications, physicals that have to be done. Mm-hmm. For us, we just handle the church part of it. So ours is pretty cut and dry if you're on the roster, and we'll do the interview, but the military will do their thing. So again, dip your toe into this. It's just an awesome, awesome place to swim.
And are you the ones that also help connect to the branch that the
Absolutely. We're a one-stop shop. So if they are interested, just contact our office at Ministry of the Armed Forces, and we will connect you with the service branch that you're interested in serving.
Fantastic. Can you give us the email, the website, and the phone number one more time so we can make sure people
Yes, absolutely. Probably the best way to get a hold of us is our email, lcmschaps@lcms.org. That's lcmschaps@lcms.org. Or you can look at our website, which is Ministry of the Armed Forces or lcms.org/armed forces. And then our phone number is 314-996-1337. But again, the email is probably the best because then we can start sending you information and we can continue and track our progress. So hope you can call us. We need you. Uncle Sam needs you.
This is great. And we'll put that information into the show notes today. So if people are driving and can't write things down, it'll all be right there in the show notes for you, waiting for you to email. Chaplain Craig Mueller, Director of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's always great to be with you guys.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Eddie Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.